Welcome to Sounds of the Bizarre live internet radio. It's all happening here. I'm still laughing because I did two false starts on this without my microphone turned on. This is Sounds of the Bizarre. We are the conference radio broadcasting live from Freie Universität Berlin. For those of you who haven't listened to our previous broadcasts, this is a huge conference, something like 2,300 people, and it's in a massive building. I don't think I've ever been in such a big university building. In fact, the student volunteers who do a lot of running this conference, they bought them three scooters to ride around, and I'm hearing sneaky things. There's been scooter races going on up and down the corridors. Anyway, we've got a fabulous program today. We're going to be talking to people, presenting sessions, talking to some of the student volunteers, and hopefully talking to the organisers of next year's conference in Cadiz. But first up today, I've got Jeff Bright. Welcome to the programme. And you're going to be talking to me about you're organising a seminar, I think, next year.
Yeah, that's right, Graham. My name's Jeff Bright, and I'm based at Manchester Metropolitan University in the UK. And we're organising a seminar in Manchester in July next year, an international seminar looking at issues related to space, place and social justice. This seminar actually emerged from just an ordinary conversation at last year's ESA. So there's a really good story about how a small conversation at ESA one year can work through the system and emerge as an actual conference date 18 months later. So basically that's what we've been up to.
Sounds brilliant. Tell me more about this theme of space, place and social justice.
Okay. Well, I'm involved with one of the networks at ESA, Network 19 Ethnography. I'm a network convener. And basically we had a symposium last year in Helsinki, and during one of the discussions, a guy who I've now got to know very well raised some issues about the ways in which ethnographers were using the terms space and place. Basically, the guy Phil, if he's out there, hiya Phil. Phil made a reference to a very abundant literature in human geography about space and place, and asked us if we knew what we were talking about. So we felt that we ought to respond to that. Developed that conversation. I took it away to one of the other conveners in Network 19 who said, work with it, Jeff, see if you can get some money, see if we can develop an event to get a really focused conversation between academics from those two different networks. So that's how it emerged. We followed it through. It's important to say that we're now supported by ERA, such that for the event in July next year, ERA will actually be supporting 8 bursaries for attendance and accommodation that are scholars and new researchers from low GDP countries, that's from low GDP countries, will be eligible to apply for those bursaries. So there's an equality focus right through from this conversation initially, right through to how we're going to deliver it in the end.
And tell me what the main themes you hope to emerge at the seminar are.
Well, we want an exchange from two disciplinary areas. That's where it started from, from geography and ethnography. But clearly, issues of the relationship between education and social justice are absolutely paramount at this moment. It's on the streets. It's a street issue in many ways throughout Europe. So we see this as a way to develop an academic debate, but also to link that debate to really vital issues about what it's like to experience education and live education in Europe and in other global settings in this contemporary moment. So it's about developing practice, really. Hopefully that's what will come out of it.
And looking presumably at some of the political implications of that practice.
Absolutely, absolutely. If people saw Saskia Sassen's keynote the other day, they'll be well aware of the way the issues of space and place are unfolding in terms of what's happening economically at the moment.
So who should be coming to this seminar? Who would you like to be? Who do you think this will be attractive for?
Yeah, well, as I said, the bursaries are being made available for established scholars and new researchers, and basically that's what we want. We want established scholars and new researchers from two fields, ethnography and geography, but we want a much wider debate about that. So basically, any scholar or new researcher who is currently working in an area that generates issues of space, that might be virtual space as well as literal space, or place, who's got a social justice question emerging from their work, basically that this event in Manchester in July next year, July the 13th, in Manchester next year, should be of interest to them. We've got some good speakers like, well, we've got agreement from a noted international scholar, Valerie Walker-Dean, and we're in the pipeline of some very other interesting and well-known international scholars as keynotes. So it's an event not to be missed, really.
I'm putting it in my diary already. My floor manager's waving at me now. Thank you very much. And we'll be putting on the website along with this broadcast full details of how you can find out more. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. You're absolutely welcome.
Okay. And I think we're talking to some of the student volunteers now. It's over to Joe.
Right. So I'm here with Tina, who's a student volunteer. How have you found your ECR conference from your perspective, having worked here?
I found it's a great experience to work here, and it was a great time. I'm a bit sad that it's now over. Yeah, nearly over.
And how did you get involved in this? So you're a student at the university, or?
Yes, I'm a student of educational science at the university, and yes, I was involved by staying at the info point and make some service for the persons, like order taxis and stuff like this.
Have you had any odd requests at all from people?
Yes.
And also, have you managed to get away to any sessions at all to see anything while you've been here?
Unfortunately not, because I've got a little child who spends her time now at the kindergarten, and at 3 o'clock I have to catch her. So unfortunately I didn't manage to see any sessions. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so thank you very much. That's great.
Okay, we'll be going into a musical break now. And when we come back, Judah will be talking to Norm Friesen. So don't go away. It's a great show. You're listening to Sounds of the Bizarre. Welcome back. I was actually enjoying that music. Dirk Stieglitz, who chooses all our music and sometimes takes some stick over it. I think he's made some great choices on the music today. But anyway, over now to Judith.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Graham. I'm here with Norm Friesen. Norm is professor for e-learning at Thompson Rivers University, Canada. Norm, can you please let the audience know a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Judith. I'm a Canada research chair, actually, in e-learning practices at Thompson Rivers University. And it's a small and new university close to Vancouver, or a few hours away from Vancouver in the west of Canada. And it's a dual-mode university, so we both teach online and in the classroom.
Thank you, Norm. You are one of the Network 6 people. I attended your talk on Tuesday, and you outlined a historical approach to teaching by asking the question, which kind of media did we use in university to transmit knowledge and to teach? Can you please tell us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, sure. So in my presentation, I talked about I looked at the history specifically of the lecture as a format. And I know everybody thinks or tends to think that lectures are boring and why are we still doing lectures? But if you look at the history of lectures, it's actually really interesting. They changed a lot over the hundreds of years that they've been around. So initially lecturing started off as a way of essentially just reading out loud, dictating what was in a classic book. And the reason that this was important and valuable and not just boring is because the printing press had not yet been invented, and so books were very rare. So the idea of having a public reading of a book where other people could listen and even write down the contents of the book was really, really valuable, because books could get lost and copies were rare and they were really valuable. What happened though later is after the printing press was invented, it only very, very gradually changed. And it took actually a few hundred years for the idea that the lecture should be something new and should be something that the lecturer was personal to the lecturer emerged. And this happened actually here in Germany with lectures by the Romantics. And we today, by Romantic scholars, that is, and we today still have the same a lot of the same conceptions about the lecture, that it needs to be something that's authentic. It shouldn't look like you're reading when you're giving a good lecture. It should look like it's something that's happening spontaneously and then is coming, you know, straight from your heart or straight out of your head or both. And the role of technology in all of this is really important, not just the invention of the book, which freed the lecture up from a process of reading, but also all of the different technologies that have been developed, a lot of the different media and technologies that have been developed since. So we use PowerPoint and we use lecture notes and other things to make that experience, the experience of giving a lecture and of sitting in a lecture, as spontaneous and as interesting and as authentic as possible. And so whether you're using a teleprompter or notes that are written on your hand, you're still using different technologies and different media to support this very ancient form of communication and teaching.
So media are getting a little bit more important in teaching and learning settings. How can you now relate the history of teaching and learning to current e-learning settings?
Right. So, well, one of the things I'm trying to indicate is, or say, in looking at the history of the lecture, is that media have always been important. Whether we're talking about media in terms of like speaking and listening, or writing notes, or reading from notes, media have always been central in education. And so in some ways education has always been media education, because it's always been about working with different types of media and different types of communication. But media definitely are multiplying, are changing all the time. So it's become more and more important to understand how that fits with education and how education can respond to that. But it's very difficult to understand how that works because of the slowness and the gradual nature of change in education and in institutions and in human understanding generally.
The final question, Norm. The classroom of the future, this is a very popular issue these days. What do you think? How could it look like?
I think that when people often do ask about the future of the classroom, you're right. And I think that when we ask about the future of the classroom and when people predict that the classroom will cease to exist or that the school will cease to exist, I think what we need to do is step back a bit and just think about the fact that people have been predicting that for a long time. So we're right now at a university that, you know, in the 1960s was the university of the future. And they probably imagined that it would be quite different than the way it is today. And so the question for me is, why is it that things have stayed the same so much, and what is valuable about the classroom and the different media that are used, whether that's speaking, writing, or computers, that make it worthwhile today?
Thank you very much, Norm Friesen, for taking the time to talk to us.
And thank you, Judith, for doing that interview. That's extremely interesting. One of the annoying things when you're sort of presenting these programs is you think, I want to go and talk to that person now, and you're stuck on the end of a microphone. Anyway, we're going in for a short musical break again with more of Dirk's great music, and then we'll be talking about the organisation of the conference, what it takes to organise a conference like this. Sunny 60s feet. You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar, the Sounds of the Summer, live internet radio, live from the Freie Universität Berlin, live from the European Conference on Educational Research. And I'm handing over to Judith now, who's going to be talking, I think, about the organization of this mighty conference.
This is right, Graham. I'm talking now to Rachel Beddo. She is working at the ERA office in Berlin, and she is very much involved in the organization of this conference, I guess. Rachel, please, can you tell us a little bit about the position you are holding and the work you are doing here?
Yeah. Well, my job title is Early Researchers Officer. So I'm responsible for everything that's to do with the young emerging researchers. So I organise the summer school in the summer, and then I also organise the Emerging Researchers Conference and all of the prizes for young researchers, the best paper and the bursaries and the best poster, and there may be some other prizes, but we can't talk about them now. So,
For how long are you doing this already?
This is my third conference. I was in, I was in Vienna for ISA 2008. Yeah, thank you for reminding me what year we're in. And I was in Helsinki for 2009. So this is my third.
Maybe we're a little bit confused about dates now, but thank you. Okay, can you now or at this point can you see some tendencies or developments? What's happening in the early researchers area?
It's getting bigger. This is the biggest early Emerging Researchers Conference. That's another, we've changed the name. It used to be called the Pre-Conference. It's now called the Emerging Researchers Conference. So that's one change. There's more people. There's now a lot more involvement between the main conference and the Emerging Researchers Conference. So this year we had the open network session where 10 main conference link conveners presented their networks at the ERC, which was really nice. So we're using the conference to bridge the development between being an emerging researcher and being a main researcher. So that's another development. And we're also getting a lot more people from Eastern Europe and also from outside of Europe, more Australians. We've had a bursary winner from Nepal, from Pakistan, from Mozambique. So it's moving a little outside of Europe as well.
Yes, Europe is moving, yeah. something else that you would like us to hear about your job or developments that we should be aware of?
I'd want to remind people there's going to be another summer school next year. And I think, I don't know how much we're making public at the minute, but there should be a couple of other summer schools coming up. So if there's any emerging researchers listening, that might be something they should keep an eye on, because they're really great. And this one in this year in Göteborg was a huge success, and next year is going to be even better.
Where can we find information about future events?
The ERA website, or, remind me of something else, we've also now got an emerging researchers mailing list, which is really great because everybody can send emails to it as well as receiving emails from it. It's supposed to create an open dialogue of emerging researchers across Europe. So you can sign up to that on the ERA website, and all information will be sent out on that. And we now have a Facebook page for ERA and Twitter, so social networks as well. All over the web.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
And thank you, Judith, for that interview. Yeah, this is the programme today. We're talking a lot what's going on, because whilst in the past the European Conference for Educational Research was just an event which happened once a year and that was it, what's becoming pretty apparent is there's seminars, there's summer schools, all kinds of meetings, all kinds of events. Anyway, next year's conference is going to be in sunny Spain, in Cadiz. And after a little bit of a musical break, I'm going to be talking to the people who are going to be organising next year's conference. And they're going to be telling you all about their beautiful city. Over to you, Dirk.
Man be a Roman, be Hispanic. Live like an emperor, live a woman and satanic. Man do a naughty, do a break. Do what the beauty, all this is you to make. Nero, Caligula, and is in smashingly formed.
Sounds of the bazaar, the sounds of the summer, and next year's ECR conference is definitely going to be the sounds of the summer coming from Cadiz. And I've got the people who are organising that conference. I'm lucky enough to have got them for the radio. Hi, what's your name?
Raquel Amaya.
Yours?
Victoria Quesada.
Eduardo.
Okay, you're the people organising it. Tell me about Cadiz. Why is Cadiz going to be a great conference?
Cadiz is, well, as you probably know, it's a very old city. It's one of the oldest cities in Western Europe. It's very sunny there. It's very nice. We've got a beautiful culture, very good gastronomy, and lovely people there. So I'm sure that all participants will enjoy the city very, very much.
And the theme of next year's conference, what is the theme of next year's conference?
It's the educational research in a freedom society. We relate it with development and the opportunity for all.
Okay, I know I should have researched that in advance, but I hadn't, but it's nice. Tell me, how many people are you expecting to next year's conference?
2,000.
And the conference is being held in the university? Is this an old university?
Yeah, the conference is going to take place in the city centre of Cadiz. We've got it at the University of Cadiz. Four campuses, and well, the venue is going to be in the middle of the city center, and we're going to use five different buildings. All of them are very close by, within 5 minutes walking, so it's going to be, I guess, very suitable for the participants to walk around and go to one from one building to another one.
Okay, and what was I going to ask? I had a question and I just totally forgotten. Yeah. You've been to this year's conference, yes? I've seen you around, and I know you've been holding lots of meetings with different people. What do you think the main challenges are in organising a conference like this?
To fit our timetable, to European timetable, because Cadiz is the southern cities of Europe, so it's quite difficult to fit our timetable to the European standard of timetable. Lapse time, the beginning of the conference, so on.
I know. I can remember we did have a conference, I think, in South Spain, in Sevilla, years ago. But, of course, the pattern of the size of the coffee you get is not North European size. And the size of the time you go for lunch, by this time, most people from North Europe are starving and wondering what's going on. That's going to be fun. So that's the big challenge, is getting these times. Well, I think all you've got to do is tell the people from North Europe they have to adapt to Southern standards. I think that's the main thing. And how many of you will be involved in this conference organisation?
We'll be at the University of Cadiz, for example. The university is involved, and as well the other Spanish Association of Pedagogy with Raquel, and we'll be around 20 people organising it, and we are trying all to work together in order to make the best of it. So everybody can enjoy it.
And quite important, the volunteers. Probably we will need 100 or more volunteers to organize or to support the conference. Mm-hmm. But it's quite important the support of the Spanish Association, both the Educational Research.
And you're from the Spanish Educational Research Association.
Yes, I think all of us are involved in this association, and the Spanish Educational Research Association, together with the Spanish Pedagogical Association, are members of ERA. So because ERA organizes an ESAR conference every year in a different European country, this time we propose to be in Spain. So the two organizations, two associations involved in ERA together with the University of Cadiz will be involved in organizing everything together with some other institutions in Spain.
Well, can I wish you the best of luck over the coming year? I've been involved with some of the organising committees, and I know it can be a challenge, but I think it can be a lot of fun as well. And I'm looking forward to speaking to you next year on the conference radio, live, not from Berlin, but live from Cadiz in Spain at the ERA Conference 2012. Good luck. See you next year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your support.
Thank you.
Okay, over to you, Dirk. Let's have some music. Listening to Sounds of the Bazaar. And Joe's just reminded me, of course, it's not only the radio we've been doing here. We've got a whole team of us working on media at ECR conference. We've been videoing a whole series of interviews with the network conveners, and I guess with those videos will be post-processed over the next month and we'll be putting them out. But that's a highlight, the best of ECR video, which we'll also be producing. But Joe's been working hard on some new ventures for us. Twitter, well, we had a Twitter account last year for ECR, but it was fairly inactive. But we've been pushing that. And also something completely new, which is our Audio Boo channel. Joe, explain what our Audio Boo channel is all about.
The Audio Boo channel is sort of a bit like a short radio clip that goes straight onto the website. And I just come and I record a little thing with you and upload it, and it goes straight onto the front of the website, onto a little player. And we've got audio boos from, I think, four of the posters yesterday told me about their posters and the way they presented it, including the poster winner, Svenja, I think it is, so check that out. And we also have audio interviews with, I think, the woman on the radio yesterday talking about emotional capital, and Eileen Lubke. So it's definitely worth a look.
And I think there's even one from me reporting on what it's like to be at a late night social at ECR. But yeah, that channel, where can they find it?
If you literally just go straight to the ECR 2011, you can type it in Google, go straight to the webpage, scroll down, and the player is there, and you can listen to them all.
So there's lots more radio fun for you. That's www.era, which is EERA-ECER.EU, I think. But it's something like that. But as Joe says, you'll get it easy enough if you do a Google search. Okay, great stuff. I think that's about it for this year's conference. We've had a whole bunch of fun. We've got a great crew here, and we've got to get a crew photograph before we finish, I think, standing behind the deck. But for the moment, this is Graham Atwell signing out from ECR 2011. You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar. Sounds of the Bazaar is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Sounds of the Bazaar was produced by Pontedusky from our outdoor broadcast studio. I say no, 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 no. No more tequila, no. I say yeah, 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 yeah. I got a chunga, yeah.